I'm trying to elevate small talk to medium talk.
Hi, I'm Alexander Chester, and Av, have you smoked any tall grass?
And I'm Av Sadansky, and I'm not used to giving people the benefit of the doubt.
And I'm Todd Stashwick, and Larry David told me to fuck myself.
Welcome back to Pretty Good, a Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast. We are here today to discuss Season 7, Episode 3, The Reunion, which originally aired on October 4th, 2009, and I think at the time might have been the most anticipated episode of the show. It was on the cover of magazines. It was talked about, you know, all season long coming into the season. And then they sort of teased us along for the first two episodes. But in season three, we get a whole bunch of guest stars. And we're very excited that one of them, as you just heard, is with us today, Todd Stashwick. Todd, welcome to the podcast. And I guess my first question is, this is an episode which, again, you know, you have Jerry Seinfeld and Julie Louis-Dreyfus and Jason Alexander, Michael Richards. But your character is really sort of the dominant character in this episode. And like, you know, as this was filming, and I guess, you know, you get cast on the episode, you know, what was your sort of reaction to like, holy shit, like, I'm like the protagonist in this episode here.
It was nuts. They didn't, like when I went for the audition, they bring you in and they didn't tell you anything. But I had known Jeff Garlin since my Second City days. And Jeff and I were friends, so it was a really warm room that I walked into, and it was Jeff and I believe it was Larry, and I think Larry Charles, who was directing the episode. And so they didn't tell me, they just were like, oh, you're auditioning to play a television executive. I'm like, okay. And then I was not given any like specifics about it being this until after I booked it. And then after I booked it, there was like, oh, and by the way, you're doing the Seinfeld episode. And that's when I lost my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it's not just that you're doing that episode, but, you know, you're sort of the driver in this episode.
I'm the guy.
Yeah.
I pulled it together. I'm the guy who, it was his idea to, like, I was the voice of the audience in many ways. I was like everybody's asking, when's there going to be a Seinfeld reunion? And it was fun to put voice to the thing that everybody was thinking and talking about and then play that guy. And we shot sequentially too, so pretty much. And so I also had that, like, it's building up, we're going to get there, we're going to go to the set. We're going to see the set. So it was really, I was a young man in the 90s, so Seinfeld was a cornerstone of our comedy education at the time. And so it was one of those, it's the closest thing you're ever really going to get to a reboot of Seinfeld, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's definitely what this season is kind of trying to be, that without, you know, without the downside of trying to be that. They're like, well, this is like a hypothetical reunion. So like, if it doesn't go well, you know, this is just a
season. Yeah, it's make-believe. It's not real. Yeah.
But if we, you know, if we hit a home run, you know, great. We pulled it off. Awesome Seinfeld mm-hmm. reunion. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And also the character of an NBC executive sort of greenlighting Seinfeld, you know, Bob Balaban plays that in season 4 of Seinfeld itself. So you're also almost like sort of doing like a second take on that character in a way.
Yeah.
Obviously one that I guess is a little less obsessed with Elaine's cleavage, but
a lot. Yeah. Yeah. A lot less. Yeah.
Yeah.
They give you so little information. They give you just enough that sort of the top and tails of the scene and then you improvise, and then Larry kind of directed it from the inside. So he, like, you'd be saying something and they're just shooting and rolling and you're saying something and I don't have a lot of lead of information. Oh, this is sort of the gist of what's going to happen in the scene. This is the information we got to get out. And so then you just kind of go and you improvise. And then he's like, oh, that's good. Yeah, say that again. But because it's Larry in the scene with you, the line between when you think when he's done playing the character and then now he's actually, it's sort of meta. So now he's talking about the shooting of the scene and then he's talking about that he's actually in the scene. So then you got to have to stay with him as he's as you're adjusting. Oh, go back and say that again. Okay, great. And then there was one point where I'm like, I don't know. He goes, yes, you do. I go, oh, no, I don't know. He goes, no, you do. No, then he goes, no, your character does know that, so let's go back and do that again, and you do know that piece of information. Oh, okay, great. Yeah, so it's a very seat-of-your-pants way to shoot.
Yep. So we'll jump into the episode in a second. I just want to ask you one question. I recently did a podcast where we made a bracket to determine the best ever television show theme song. And a number of listeners got really mad at me for not having included the Kim Possible theme song. And I noticed that you were in the movie version of Kim Possible, and you also guessed it on, like, you know, seemingly every TV show of the last couple decades. So I'm going to put you on the spot. What's your favorite TV theme song from any show that you've been on?
Oh, any show I've been on?
Sure.
Oh.
Or any show in general, I guess you could say.
Well, first, I'd say any show I've been on. It might be Buffy. That's a great theme song.
Mm, yeah.
Just those sort of surf guitars of Buffy. Those are some good. Those are some good themes. Of show of all time. Look, I'm a kid of the 70s and 80s, so there's a lot of great ones to choose from.
Yeah, whether that was the golden era. For sure.
It's Taxi or MASH or Cheers or Greatest American Hero or Welcome Back, Kotter. Like, theme songs were an art form back then. Soap. Like, there was some great theme songs, Seinfeld included, but there was just this glut of great theme songs in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, I'm watching Cheers now for like the first time straight through, and the theme song is my favorite part of each episode. It's like the only show where I would watch the whole thing, and it's like we look forward to the theme song. And it's like, all right, I guess we have 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's really good. It's just really good.
Yeah, and the imagery they have going along with it's just so nice.
It stands alone, and that's the thing is a lot of those songs would just get radio time, and you would hear the verses that they would leave out, and you would on the radio you'd hear the whole song. So I could sing the entire theme song to Cheers right now, but you guys don't have the licensing.
Well, let me ask you another question, actually. Beyond just the theme song, Rolling Stone just came out with the ranking of the top 100 sitcoms of all time, I think today or yesterday or something.
Wow.
What's your favorite show that you guessed it on? Not the theme song, but a show, like, as a show.
Favorite show as a guest star. It's not a situation comedy. I think it might have been Supernatural. Because I got to play Bela Lugosi's Dracula on that in a black and white episode. And so the job itself was one of the most fun jobs I've ever had, wearing a big cape and having my hair slicked back. And I got to ride a scooter. But I also had to mimic Bela Lugosi's performance. So that was one of my favorite jobs. I had a blast. I mean, I've gotten to be on a lot of sitcoms. So working on Dharma and Greg and working on Will and Grace were fun, but Curb, obviously, if I can help you segue back to the topic at hand, was one of the highlights, obviously, because it was just so special and rare of an experience. Yeah,
I do have one kind of Curb related question before we dive into the episode, and that is, big fans of Curb Enthusiasm and fans of this podcast will remember all the way back in season 3, episode 1, we have a kind of like Wizard of Oz themed episode of Curb where Ted Danson throws a birthday party for his kid and Larry David has a specific demand to perform as, you know, one of the costumed entertainers at the Danson birthday party. And Todd, I don't know if you recall or are aware that the only role that he's interested in playing is that of the Cowardly Lion, because he claims that he does the best Cowardly Lion. So this is my long-winded way of asking you, has Larry David ever challenged you to a best Cowardly Lion voice contest?
To a Burt Lahr off?
That's right.
I you know what? That rumble in the jungle has yet to occur, so it looms in my future, I'm sure now that the gauntlet is thrown and you've put it into the ether. I'm sure it's gonna come to a Burt Lahr off.
Yeah, to fill in the viewers, the listeners. Todd was the voice of the Cowardly Lion in both Tom and Jerry and the Wizard of Oz, and Tom and Jerry Back to Oz.
Back to Oz, because like there were so many unanswered questions.
Yeah,
yeah,
we had to
That's
go
Ob's
back.
Favorite movie
we had
ever.
To go back.
So
well.
The Wizard of Oz or Tom and Jerry back to Wizard of Oz?
Well, The Wizard of Oz is one of my favorite movies ever. Return to Oz, on which Tom and Jerry back to Oz is kind of loosely based with Jason Alexander as the Gnome King. So another tie into this episode.
Firouza Balk?
I think this episode and that movie are the only pieces of pop culture in which you and Jason Alexander have appeared together.
Not true.
Okay.
Jason directed me on an episode of Franklin and Bash.
Oh wow.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
So we've worked together on set, on screen together on Curb, on set together on Franklin and Bash. So I got to be directed by him as well. Yeah.
Very cool.
We should make at the end of the series of this podcast like a pretty good trivia game, maybe for listeners.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Because I think, remember, like last week, Wayne Fetterman kept dropping, he would actually preface them by saying, I got a good piece of trivia for you. He did that like 4 or 5 times, and I think that's another good one we just got from Todd.
Yeah, the main takeaway, what I heard from that whole exchange was, after this podcast is over, Todd is going to reach out to Larry and arrange for this Cowardly Lion competition, which will be hosted on this podcast.
Ah, yes.
Well, he won't stop calling about it. So
yes,
finally, I can have an answer for it.
All right, great.
All right, so on that note, yeah, let's jump right into the episode here.
Okay.
So we are at the Green Home, and Jeff and Larry are basically doing a nice little episode of Pretty Good in Jeff's house, like basically recapping the end of season 7 episode 2, saying how Loretta was cursing him out and drove off because she thought he was cheating, and even got the finger from Auntie Ray one last time, but Leon's still in the house, so he's not quite living alone just yet. Jeff pivots over to the business side of things and talks about how NBC just keeps hounding him about doing a Seinfeld reunion. They keep calling, they won't stop. Larry's not interested. Those reunion shows, they're so lame, they never work, the actors are 10 years older, it doesn't look right, Jerry would never do it. And Jeff's like, you're probably right, it's not a good idea, but come to the meeting, tell them no, and that way I could at least say, look, he said no, what do you want from me? And then, maybe they'll come back with something that you're more interested in and we can, move forward. And Larry's like, okay, you're right. So Susie comes in and she feels like crap because, she's going to the doctors and they think it's in her head, which is ridiculous. And everyone agrees. Larry says that she has very good disposition. Jeff says she's a picture of happiness. And Larry's like, I wonder, have you been in any tall grass lately? Because, a friend of mine recently had a similar situation, and it turned out that he had Lyme disease. And Susie's like, well, actually, now that you mentioned it, I did go in the dunes when I was out in the Hamptons on Fire Island. Not the Hamptons, Fire Island. And they're like, but how do you know this stuff? And he's like, well, hypochondriac, I know this stuff. So Larry's checking in for his meeting at NBC and he bumps into Cheryl, who he turns out is there for an audition. And, they schmooze a little. He talks about how, we have the Seinfeld reunion that we might be doing, but I'm not really going to do it. So it's not really going to happen. And she's like, oh, you really should, because people love reunions. Everyone just wants to see the cast back together, see what they're up to, see how everyone looks. Alex, I feel like you have a little bit of a Cheryl villain take here, how she basically insists, well, you'll cast me in it, and she'll insist several times, and I'm not kidding, I really want you to cast me in this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know if Jared Jerome might write in with a letter yelling at her, as he is wont to do.
Yeah,
I got no problem with Cheryl she's doing what she should do here. If she'll use his access to get a table at a restaurant, as we saw last episode, I'm sure she'll try and use it to, star on a major episode of television.
Yeah, she has very little shame for somebody where it's she outright left him, and he's made it clear that he would love to get back together with her.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I have no problem with what Cheryl's doing here. Got to do what you can to get ahead in Hollywood.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So she's been doing Pilates, learning Japanese, and she's actually into the Lakers now. Now that she's no longer married to Larry David, she became a big Lakers fan. She's actually going to the game Thursday night. And Larry says, actually, I was thinking of going with Jeff as well. So, maybe we'll bump into each other, and maybe they will.
Yeah.
All right, so we're gonna head to the next scene, and we're just gonna play a little clip of that. So you know, listen, watch along, and then we'll break it down.
All right, let's get this bullshit over with.
Okay.
Larry, I'm gonna ask you the same question that every affiliate asks me every day of my job: is when are we gonna get a Seinfeld reunion? Mm-hmm. Huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
I don't know.
Well, the window is wide open.
Really engaged right there, Larry.
Well, listening to you has me excited.
It's because I'm excited.
I think that
odd making hard sell.
Hour, half hour.
Yeah. I am thinking whatever you want to do. What are you thinking? Do you want to do an hour? Do you want to do a half hour? We don't care. It's the finest commodity NBC has.
And we can have a little dream sequence for Larry now in the Seinfeld apartment.
Really like what didn't that take?
Really? Because I can try it a different way if you want me to. Or I can.
No. Don't
what scene were they filming that you would be wearing that dress, I wonder?
Got a couple little things.
Ah, what a moment. I love that moment with the camera, like, pants out.
The entrance. The slide, it's working.
Well, it's making me a bit dizzy, but I'll do anything for you, Larry.
Julia, so this is the first time that they show them all together, right?
Yeah.
Your idea.
Completely very exciting works. Moment.
Glasses? You're killing me.
I can't do it as good as you, but I'm going to keep trying.
And that new line, the kumquat and the
yeah, this is probably how it'll go.
You're amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. You're really unbelievable, Larry.
I was actually standing off to the side because they spliced that in after they shot that because they had them all on the set that day.
You're going to do it.
Yes. I'm going to do it. And I have a pretty good idea for George, too.
He's already writing.
In the 11 writing. Years since the show's been off the air, he's gotten married and divorced, and now he's going to try and get his wife back.
Money.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's not a great idea, but I can work with it.
No, I think it's a great idea.
I love this.
What about Jerry?
I'll talk to Jerry, and I'll talk to the cast.
Great. Great.
Awesome.
We need to celebrate.
We do.
You like basketball?
Of course.
Basketball. Yeah, of course.
Love basketball.
Yeah. Well, you want to go to a Lakers game?
We were going to try and go Thursday night.
Yeah, we're going to get scalpers tickets.
No need. No need. That. We will hook you up.
Yes, no kidding.
I will hook you up. Don't you even worry about that.
You should have brought this idea up a long time ago.
If he had known that he could go to a Lakers game, then, you know, yeah. He'd have it all.
Right. How else could Larry David get access to it? Like, yeah. Although I got to say, bad job by Sandy, by the NBC executive there, not knowing if LD likes basketball. Like, you know, that Larry David is known for liking basketball, and frankly, in the world of Curb, he once famously tripped Shaq while sitting courtside at a Lakers game. So, you know,
it's called baiting the hook. Yes, I knew, I guess. But you throw it out there casually,
yeah,
so that they go, oh, that seems like a good idea.
Also, if you're offering third deck tickets, maybe you're hoping he says no, but we'll find out about that shortly.
He didn't know at the time, yeah.
Yeah, so you were saying, so while they film the dream sequence, you get to watch that. And again, as a Seinfeld fan, that must have been just like a surreal thing to watch.
It was ridiculous because, I mean, obviously, then we get later and then you get to the table read and everything. There was just that day that you, and I live, you know, they went back to the CBS Radford lot where they shot it originally, and they rebuilt the diner and they rebuilt the apartment. And it was so meta because there was a table read for a fake episode,
right.
But all the sets were all there and the cast was all there, and so we shot the scenes from the table read, and then we shot that scene, and then there's another scene where I'm like, go get him, where like I'm sort of leading him into the dream sequence. I'm off to the side. Go do what you're supposed to do or meant to do. And so they block shot all that stuff because they had them all there on the same day. And so I got to watch the Seinfeld cast walk onto the apartment set for the first time since they stopped shooting the series. And so watching them take it all in was far more emotional for them than it would be for me, but I was not to be the guy to watch them do that. So it was ridiculously special.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also like there's just like an extra layer of meta irony. This is probably the only episode of Curb where there was like a concept of a table read. You know, this is a show that's like largely improvised. So it's like the concept that they're like, oh, we're doing a table read at the Curb set. Yeah. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a script. I mean, they wrote a Seinfeld episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's, I saw there's somewhere you could just like watch the whole thing online, but then it got taken down, and I didn't spend enough time seeing if I could still find it. But it's definitely floating around out there. I'm sure.
I don't even know who you are.
Yeah, I'm sure someone dig it up.
Shame on you.
I wonder if there was more. You know, obviously Curb usually is very loose and doesn't have too much of a script. Just, you know, you got to hit like one or two lines or whatever in a scene. But yeah. In this episode, like, for example, in the dream sequence, was that all scripted? Because they sort of need sort of each person to sort of give like the kiss assy line to Larry. And, you know, that's sort
I don't remember what they were told, because I just know the process to which I was
for your scenes. Yeah.
Given outlines. Yeah. So I'm assuming and look who you have there.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, here, kiss his ass here. Like, I don't think Jerry with the kumquat and the quail, like, I think he probably cycled through, yeah, like 10 different versions of what that joke was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like very specific to the character. So good job by them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. So, okay, so we head out of NBC. Larry's really excited. I need to call Jerry. I was like, you know who I think you should call is Cheryl and let her know you just scored her apart on the Seinfeld reunion.
Yeah, I love how Jeff immediately sees through Larry's scheme. It's incredible.
Yeah, he's like, I know what you're up to. It hit me as soon as we walked out that this is your plan to win back Cheryl. Pretty fucking brilliant, if you ask me. So that's 1 out of 5 pretty fucking brilliance for Jeff. And Larry says, you know, it's going to be a great opportunity. I'll be with her day and night. I'll be directing her. She'll be acting. She'll see me in a whole new light as a working man. And Jeff's like, yeah, no, I'm like not calling you out. It's a great idea.
I just gave you more trivia. Ready? You want some more trivia?
Sure. As the maximum amount of trivia, please.
This is the 6 degrees thing. So Jeff plays Sean Gimbroni's father on the Goldbergs. Sean played Ron Stoppable in the Kim Possible movie with me.
Oh, wow.
Very cool.
Pretty crazy. Like, very so, cool. And then I worked with Jeff back in the day.
Yeah,
so
and I know
it all does this. Yeah.
Alex, I know Kristen was giving you a hard time about the Kim Possible. And I saw that Todd was also on Criminal Minds. So, you know, you could maybe book him for when you guys do that podcast. Mm.
Yeah,
Vangus.
I know you have that in the works.
Yeah, that's in the, yeah, that's the next podcast we're doing.
It's in production.
Yeah,
it's in development. Okay, so we're in. I think it's Larry's office, and we got Larry and Jerry on screen together.
Well, no, this is pretty clearly Jerry's office. I think Jerry must have Jerry's an LA office. Because okay. Yeah, it's not Larry. And I was kind of wondering where are they meeting. It's not Larry's office. Jerry must have an office in LA. You know, he's obviously usually based in New York, but it what's interesting to me is that there's really no discussion of either here or in the next scene with Jason Alexander at the restaurant with all the naked women in it. There's no reference to the fact that like last time Larry was trying to meet with Jason for something, there was a whole argument about, you know, where are they meeting and what's equidistant and whose office are they meeting at. Here, all of a sudden, Larry's, you know, he'll meet anywhere you want. You want to meet at Jerry's office, meet at Jerry's office. You want to meet at a restaurant with naked women, you know, but there's no sort of callback to that at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, last time, all that he had invested was the possibility of a TV show. Here, he's trying to win back his ex-wife.
Yeah, that's true. So he's a little more flexible.
Yeah, he's willing to work for it. So Jerry's like, why are we doing this? You know, like, didn't you always say that, like, reunions are desperate and pathetic? And you would always make that, like, very judgmental face of yours where, you know, you're seeing people who don't live up to your aesthetic standards and you criticize and you downgrade them. And Larry's like, who, me? Criticize? Downgrade? What are you talking about? And like Jerry's just like, I don't know what's going on here. I feel like I'm being sold something and I don't know why. It's like when I'm in a car showroom and the dealer is trying to close the sale. And, you know, this just like doesn't really add up to me. And Larry's like, well, it was just like, you know, it would be so nice to be together again and get together. And Jerry's just like, well, but, like, you're not a get together guy. And he's like, okay, let's grab dinner sometime. We'll go for a nice dinner. And all Larry can say is, you know, I think he falls back on what Cheryl wants is what, you know, everybody just wants it. Why are we depriving them of this amazing thing of seeing everyone together? And, you know, Jerry goes very dark here. He compares it to, you know, getting back with your ex-girlfriend and like, you know, how are we going to make it work? You know, it's, you know, 10 years later, you know, have you heard of any relationship where that's worked? Actually, I apologize. Larry's the one that takes it in a dark direction. And he's like, well, how about Robert Wagner and Natalie Wood? Todd, what happened to Natalie Wood? You know?
Well, there's so many.
Well,
so
yeah,
many
I'm asking
rumors.
If you know the real answer.
Well, she drowned.
Yeah, no, either she drowned, and then they reopened it, and apparently Christopher Walken was there because that comes up. Her death is actually referenced in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, my favorite movie.
It's a salacious. Yeah, there's a lot of salacious rumors that go around about what was going on there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that that scene with Brad Pitt on the boat is supposed to be like a reference to this.
Oh yeah, and there's rumors that she was dead before she hit the water. Like there's
right. Yeah, like they like reopened the autopsy like many many years later, and they like updated it from accidental drowning to drowning with like other undetermined factors. So like, but yeah, at this point, it's unlikely they're gonna figure it out.
There's somebody who knows.
To segue back to a slightly less morbid conversation, this whole like shift no shift conversation between Larry and Jerry is straight out of Seinfeld. It's like absolutely a delight to watch. And I think a funny thing just in general about this Larry Jerry scene is that, you know, in real life, Jerry and Larry might have been, you know, very good friends in the 80s or the 90s, but the Larry David character on Curb, his close friends are Jeff and Richard Lewis and the Funk Man and Leon. But like Jerry's a guy who he barely has a relationship with anymore. Again, in the Curb universe, they haven't even spoken basically in 7 seasons. So to sort of
The only time we see Jerry is at the opening night of the producers. He walks out right away because of how terrible it is.
Yeah. So it's sort of fun to see them all of a sudden, you know, get right back into the groove of, you know, what they were doing, you know, sitting around a table 30 years ago, coming up with the original Seinfeld.
Yeah, just like kibitzing and coming up with material.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So the bottom line is Jerry wants to know, why is this not going to be lame? And Larry's like, because we'll do it in a way that won't be lame, which I guess is the pitch for the season of Curb is we're going to do a reunion, but in a way that's not lame. We're going to do it in a really interesting, clever, meta way. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows? So, you know, Jerry's like, yeah, I guess, you know, if everyone else is in, I guess I'm into, you know, but as you know, you were saying for that George storyline that you pitched earlier, you know, who would be great for the part of his ex-wife, Meg Ryan. I just saw her. She's wonderful. She's beautiful. She's hilarious. And now Larry's like, oh, shit. Like the whole point of this is to get Cheryl for that part. Like, there's no what are we even doing here if all of a sudden it's Meg Ryan instead? Although, you know, Meg Ryan's not bad. You could go after her instead.
Oh, yeah. So you're saying Larry will get Meg Ryan instead.
Yeah, instead of Cheryl.
Yeah. She's so desperate to get a job in Hollywood that she'll sleep with Larry David.
they did the premiere of this at the Paramount lot on a big screen. They showed this episode. So it was one of these really wonderful nights because it was such a specific thing that everybody was waiting for. They did a big party to show the reunion special. And I was in the lobby with my wife and I turned around. And one was like, you were very funny in the show. And I turned around and it was Meg Ryan. And I was like, like Sally liked my work. That was awesome. Yeah. It was fun.
Yeah. They're like, you know what? Casting will sort itself out, whether it's Meg Ryan, whether it's Cheryl, we'll figure it out one way or another. Those are two both good options. So we head to a restaurant called James Beach, and Larry once again meeting with Jason Alexander and tells him all about the ex-wife plotline idea. And Jason's like, you know, I don't really think people are going to believe that somebody who's as jerky, mucky, and unappealing as George ever got married. So like the whole storyline doesn't work. And Larry's like, and again, like they basically do a very similar thing to what they did back in season 2 when he meets with Jason and Jason basically insults George, and Larry's defensive of George, and he's like, I don't understand what's so unappealing about George. And you know, and Jason's like, well, you know, he's selfish, he's stupid, he lies. And Larry's like, it's like all I hear is funny. Everything you just described sounds very funny.
Yeah.
And Jason's like, yeah, people are laughing, but it's more like laugh with, more laugh at than laugh with, if you ask me.
Yeah.
What Jason is very excited about, however, is that this will finally be an opportunity to make up for the finale.
Jason's definitely on team Av here. We had a disagreement a few weeks ago. Av is on Jason Alexander's side that the finale of Seinfeld was a disaster and was terrible, and it's something they need to make up for. And I'm on Larry's side.
I would split the difference on the two parts of the sentence. I do think it was a terrible disaster. I don't think we're entitled to having them made up for it. Like they gave us many, many, many amazing episodes. Yes. I happen to think the last one sucked. That's fine. I think this version is, I think this, they do end up coming back and giving us the quote ending that finally made like an awesome ending. I don't think
you would insult the episode to Larry David's face the way that Jason does, obviously. But yeah, I think, it might not have been my favorite episode, but I thought it was fine. And
it was what the actual Seinfeld reunion or the Seinfeld
finale.
Series finale?
Yeah.
No, I loved it. But really? Okay. I thought it was audacious and I like a big swing.
Yeah, it definitely was a big swing. I definitely give them that.
Yeah.
And my opinion is that the finales of shows, of series, especially sitcoms, especially in that era, no matter what, people were going to trash it. I think it had like a no-win proposition because people always wanted to be upset and disappointed.
You know what? You're right. That was the era where people trashed TV.
Yeah, as opposed to now where online.
They don't do that anymore. They're so kind. Like, nobody, everybody likes everything. It's nice. And they don't share their opinions either.
Yeah.
So that was the era, and we put a lid on it. So we're done. That's
right. We've improved since then.
Yeah, and of course, like, it's not like, one of these finales like, Game of Thrones or a Lost, where it's like not only the finale itself made people upset because it's more that it like retroactively made people feel like they had invested their time in something fruitless, which people can, agree to disagree on that. But with Seinfeld, like, it does, like, even the episode right before is still just as good. Like, it's irrelevant to, like, judging of the series, in my opinion.
The person who hates the episode more than anyone on Earth wouldn't go as far as, people do about, as you said, like, Lost or Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's just kind of a bummer. That's all.
Yeah.
But, like, Larry's like, I don't understand what's there to even make up for. Like, we already did do a good ending. Like, what are you talking about? As Jason was talking, Larry's like staring at the space, looking at these like very artsy boob paintings, which I guess we just want to establish that these exist in this restaurant so that we'll understand what happens with Kramer later.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird non sequitur though, how they don't really notice that. Like, I feel like you walk in that restaurant, that's the first thing you would notice, but they don't really notice until halfway through their meal.
Yeah,
the boobs and everything else.
Yeah, so Larry just gives us the update on the lay of the land. Jerry's in, if everyone else is in. Sounds like George is in. I'm meeting with Michael tomorrow. I was supposed to meet with Julia today, but then her daughter had this birthday party, so she canceled. But hopefully, we're going to speak tomorrow. So we get an update on like the first act of this heist movie of the get the gang together.
Yeah.
So finally, the meal's over, the check comes, and Larry's like, hey, what are you tipping? Let's coordinate the tip. Let's make sure we both put the same thing down. And Jason's like, I'm going to write down what I write down. I don't know what you're talking about. And Larry's like, how about $12? And Jason says, yeah, $12 seems great. You should not be ashamed of writing down $12. That's a great number for the tip here. So you go ahead and do that. And, it becomes clear that Jason is not sharing the value of his tip, and Larry's on his own. Oh. So we head over to, Julia's house now. Or no, we're in Larry's house, I think.
For the meeting with Julia,
He's pitching Julia, and he suggests for her a plot line where a little girl asks her to give her doll a haircut, and she does, and then the girl freaks out because she didn't realize that doll's hair won't grow back. This, of course, is straight out of season 2, episode 7, The Doll of Curb Your Enthusiasm, where Larry does exactly that. And Julia loves this idea. She thinks it's great to have something with Elena around children and seeing how that would go. But like, she's really like, let's take a step back. These reunion shows are always tacky. They feel like they're doing it for the wrong reasons, which of course they are here. And she's like, is Jerry really into this? And Larry says, yeah, he's chomping at the bit. And they have a brief interlude where they debate whether the word is chomping or champing. And I was actually surprised by this because I've only heard chomping at the bit, and I looked it up, and apparently champing at the bit is the proper original phrase.
So I'm like you. Yeah, I say chomping, but I know that it's – so like Julia does, but I know that it's actually wrong like Larry. But yeah.
Yeah, well, I learned that today.
Maybe it's the Mandela effect. Maybe it's like a Berenstain Bear thing.
Yeah, for sure. But you know what? Maybe like the Berenstain Bear thing, I'm sticking with chomping even though I know it's supposed to be champing because –
Yeah, I'm sticking with I'm sticking with chomping, but I'm not so like self-centered narcissistic that I'm going to insist that there must be have been a divergence in the fabric of the existence of the universe to explain why I misremember something.
Yeah,
I am.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I'm going with Berenstain Bear effect.
Berenstain Bear is chomping at the bit.
Yeah.
By the way, just to go back to the last scene, you know, after Jason leaves the restaurant, Larry could have just gone up to the waiter and asked how much he tipped him. You know, he waits till the next day. And this waiter's motivation is very strange to me because I feel like, you know, I know like I've heard like Charles Barkley, whenever he is getting serviced, he'll always ask the person, what's the greatest tip you've ever gotten? And then whatever they say, he'll top it. And it's sort of the same thing. Like this waiter should be incentivized to tell Larry how much Jason gave or even lie up. Because he knows the reason he's asking is because Larry's going to go match it. So, you know, this waiter's got some weird motivations because he could have got a hefty tip there. But yeah, he's always like everyone else in Kirby's against Larry David. So that's his primary motivation.
Yeah. And then So Julia's daughter comes in. So I guess we are in Julia's house because that makes sense. Okay.
Oh yeah.
And Larry's like, oh hey, how was the birthday party? Oh. And she's like, what birthday party? What are you talking about? And she, yeah, turns out she knows nothing about this. So Larry's thinks that's very interesting. So we head back over to James Beach restaurant, and Larry now meeting with the fourth and final member of the gang, having lunch with the K-Man. Tell him that he has some really good ideas for him. For example, how about, you know, you're in the carpool lane and you have to pick up a hooker in order to use the carpool lane. Again, season 4, episode 6. So, you know, basically Larry David saying once and for all again, everything that happened on Seinfeld, that was me. That happened to me. Those were my ideas. I don't know why they called it Seinfeld, but, you know, I guess they just needed a big star like Jerry Seinfeld.
I have to say, I love like the randomness of the restaurant nudity distracting Michael Richards. It's so funny to me. And then like, you know, how he's so distracted that he's unfamiliar with the idea of the reunion. It sort of reminds me of Kramer's unfamiliarity with the idea of buying the massage chair for the Drake in Seinfeld.
Right.
It's like, oh, it's a great idea, but I don't know anything about this.
Joe Mayo fellow.
Oh, it's Joe Mayo. Sorry, not Drake. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Sorry. Yeah.
He's like, I don't know who's this Joe Mayo fellow.
Yeah. Frankly, it sounds made up.
Yeah, so, you know, the waiter comes over, you know, he does this whole routine where he's like, you know, scratch your face if it was over $12, tug on the tie if it was over 15, you know, if it's over 30, lift the pot over your head, and of course, way over 30, so, yeah. So we head over to Staples, it's the night of the big game, and Larry and Jeff are, you know, there to pick up their tickets, and Larry's like, great news, everyone's in. Jeff's like, I have news too, Susie has Lyme disease, I guess you saved her life. And Larry sees Cheryl walking in with her friends, and she runs over to tell her, you know, he runs over to tell her, you know, the reunion's on, and guess what? You're going to be playing George's ex-wife, and she is super duper excited. Of course, you know, he doesn't mention that nobody has agreed to this other than him yet, but, you know, we'll save that for later in the season. And we now come to our second clip of the episode.
I'm telling you, it was unbelievable. You should have seen the look on her face. I could get over it.
Here are your tickets, sir.
Thank you. I'll go see a fantastic game, huh? It's all working out.
Yeah. Where are these?
And the whole team, you.
19, are you kidding me? Look at this. This has to be a mistake. You couldn't have given us seats up here.
This is a joke. Just a joke.
Oh, my God. Can you believe these seats this guy gave us? Look at this. You gotta be kidding. Oh, this is crazy. We could have stayed home.
I could have ridden the treadmill and watched it on TV and gotten the same effect.
Well, why would he do this? Why would he give it? Did he do it on purpose?
I don't know.
Should we give him the benefit of the doubt?
Yeah, I guess.
I'm not used to giving people the benefit of the doubt. I don't even know how to condition myself to do it.
I thought he had courtside seats. I mean, can I borrow your...
So, Todd, was this filmed at an actual Lakers game?
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. So you got to sit courtside for a Lakers game with David Spade.
Dude, can I tell you? We were sitting there, and then they would just shuffle people around when they were shooting, and then Kobe would actually sit down next to me because it was right there. And then down the seats from us, it was Jonah Hill and Anthony Kiedis just happened to be there.
Yeah, like at the Kansas game, goes to like all the Lakers games, doesn't he? Or a lot of them. Like
and they look, okay, so. And of course, because Spade is a known human, they're like, oh hey, what are you guys doing here? So we're actually filming an episode of Curb. I'm like, that's awesome. And then they were like, these shots that you just saw, you know, they got them, and then they would like radio down, like, well, we got the shot, and we can't do anything else until the game's over, so enjoy the game.
Awesome.
So I watched the rest of the game. I couldn't. I even know when I was. I was here's, in outer space.
Here's my question, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but like David Spade doesn't have any speaking lines. He's just sort of seen sitting next to you. They could have picked anyone in Hollywood to be the guy who, you know, Sandy, the NBC exec, takes to the game to sit next to him. How did they pick David Spade? I wonder.
You know, the casting decisions are far beyond my purview.
Yeah.
But it was a hoot. Like, we, you know, I hung out with David the whole night, and and then I think he's there with me when we do the scene outside after this when Larry calls us out. But yeah, it was. I could never go to a Lakers game again because I've been spoiled. I've had the finest seats ever, and I was pretty crazy. Like I said, they kept putting this guy there who was sort of a seat filler on the other side of me. But then when that guy would leave, it was Kobe's seat. So Kobe would just kept sitting down to have water. And I think he sweat on me a couple of times. But it was nice. It was a pretty rare, amazing experience. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Go ahead.
I guess Sandy was, you know, maybe a Just Shoot Me reunion was in the cards as well.
That's what it was. So Jack Como was like two people down. You just couldn't see on the frame.
I do have to say, like, to go into like the world of the episode, it's absolutely insane that they would give Larry fucking David those tickets. It's like incomprehensibly insulting. And I guess the question is, you know, and Larry says, should I give the benefit of the doubt? Like, what is, you know, to go into the head of Sandy, what is Sandy's motivation here? Why is he doing that? Is it a fuck you to Larry, or?
Having not go that deep into the situation, I think it was like last minute, maybe, like you were saying, Spade had a thing and it's like, oh, okay, well, I promised these to him first. Didn't know if Larry was going to come on that night, XYZ. So I got these. So
the next sort best of shoveled tickets, him
up there to be like, to what? But I got you tickets to Lakers.
They are technically tickets.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of begs the question to begin with, why like Larry David and not Jerry Seinfeld is like the main guy they're targeting to try to get this to happen. Because let me tell you this, Jerry Seinfeld's not sitting in the nosebleeds.
No, not at all. No. Yeah, and it's the best I could come up with on short notice.
Yeah, so we continue. We see Larry's trying to call Sandy, and we see him screening the call here.
Oh, that's great.
What? He screened my call.
How do you screen your call?
I saw him in the binoculars. He screened the call. Well, I always thought people were doing that when I called them. This just confirms it.
See, you taught me a lesson. I was going to give somebody the benefit of the doubt. I almost did. And something said, no, don't. It's not for you.
It's not my thing.
It's not for you.
Another waste of time. Why did we even stay the whole time? I don't even know.
Oh, Sandy Goodman.
Listen, just don't go nuts. All right? I know you want to say something, but don't.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
Why does Jeff abandon Larry there? That's a terrible move.
Yeah, he'll say later.
Do you want the game?
Well, you told the head of NBC to go fuck himself?
He sure did. And yeah, Larry gives him the whole rundown with the tickets and the phone screening. But Larry's like, Sandy's out of his mind. He's apoplectic. This behavior is completely unacceptable. Julia's like, you know what else is unacceptable? What were you doing grilling my daughter about a birthday party and calling me a liar? And Larry's like, well, I didn't really call her a liar. I just said I thought it was interesting that you said you were taking to her birthday party and she didn't know the first thing about a birthday party. And Julia's like, well, you know, what I think is interesting is that I have two daughters, and it was the other one. And Jason chimes in and says, you know, another thing that's interesting, nay, fascinating, I would say, is that you went back to a restaurant to harass some waiter about the amount of my tip. And Larry's like, well, no, you're the crazy one because you wouldn't agree to tip in concert. But Jerry's all Team Jason here. Tip is a solo act. You know, you don't need to consult.
I love the pylon.
Yeah. And, you know, then Michael walks in and, you know, Jerry goes on to say, you know, none of this matters because unless you apologize to Sandy Goodman, there's not going to be any reunion show. And it's at this point that Alex, as you said earlier, Michael's like, what reunion show? But of course, he's like, yeah, it sounds like a great idea. Like, he's in without any need to be convinced. And Jerry basically sums up the operation here. You got all the principals, but the project's in the toilet because Larry David doesn't want to sit in the loge.
Yeah. Now, I got to say, like, you know, this almost reminds me of, you know, like in sports where, like we see Aaron Rodgers right now in the Packers, where like the star player has a disagreement with the coach or the front office. And although ostensibly the coach or the manager of the front office is like senior to the player, in practice, the player wants what he, like the team's going to fire the coach before they get rid of the player. And I feel like Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld have enough hand with NBC that Larry David could like take a shit on the lawn of the head of NBC and they'd still air a Seinfeld reunion episode. I find it very hard to believe that Sandy is so powerful that he's like, well, Larry told me to fuck myself. So, you know, screw the network and screw the hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever this is going to generate, you know, unless I get a groveling apology, it ain't happening.
I guess you wouldn't have a episode.
Yeah. But yeah, Sandy's a very powerful guy in Hollywood.
Very powerful guy. Yeah. So pulling out those threads. And I also think they've obviously been asking them about it for a very long time. Yeah. So I think finally it's going to be, it's the fact that they had NBC by the short hairs about this stuff for the longest time. There's a bitterness there. Nobody likes to give up any yardage in their power in this city. You know?
Yeah. Let's see how it works out. So we head back over to Jeff's house, and Jeff's like, I screwed up. I never should have left you alone with Goodman.
Obviously, yeah.
I agree with Larry. I agree with Jerry. You got to apologize. And Larry's like, okay, I'll apologize. And Jeff's like, well, is it going to be a real apology or is it going to be a begrudging apology? And Larry's like, well, begrudging, of course. And Jeff's like, no, that doesn't work. You have to do a real apology. And Larry agreed, you know, I'll toe the line. I'll find the space in between sincere and begrudging. And Jeff's like, I think you're just going to fuck up the apology if you do this. So Larry's like, well, then I'll just apologize for the apology. And Jeff's like, no, this doesn't work. Forget about you. What about Cheryl? Like, if you screw this up, there's no part for Cheryl. That's the thing that finally convinces Larry once again. So Susie comes on in and, you know, she's looking for her cell phone and, you know, she's about to walk out and Larry's like, hello, you know, no, thank you. Like, you know, I saved you I saved your life. And Susie's like, you didn't save my life, you fucking idiot. Like, what are you talking about? And she's like, yeah, I did. Like, I did. I said Lyme disease, and it was Lyme disease. She's like, yeah, well, you know, yeah, you know, I have Lyme disease. Like, I didn't feel good. Now I feel better. Okay, you didn't save my life. Okay, fine, Larry. You saved my life. Thank you so much, Larry. And now, you know, Larry's now, he's set off. He's like, you know what happens if you get Lyme disease? Everything goes. The kidneys, the joints, the lungs. And Susie's like, well, then you should be very glad that I didn't get it since you're my friend, right? Mm-hmm. And Larry's like, you know what? Next time, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to shut my mouth. You know, that little spot you got on your forehead, don't worry about it. It's definitely not skin cancer.
I got to say, like, Susie, she went over in the Nanny from Hell episode, she went over the top in thanking Larry David for, quote unquote, saving her life when, you know, his sponge cakes had broken her fall. And it was very indirect and accidental, Larry's role there. Here, where he much more directly addressed her health, she has no appreciation whatsoever. And I'm kind of shocked about that. I feel like, she should have called him immediately.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. A thank you seems appropriate given the circumstances.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. So we head back over to NBC. And here's our last clip and pretty much the last scene of this episode.
I just wanted to apologize if I offended you or insulted you in any way. So, this is me apologizing. It's about as sorry as I can get. I guess my question is, was it sorry enough?
That's it?
No good.
No good.
Too begrudging.
Very begrudging.
Can I apologize for the apology?
You know what? I'm going to put the kibosh on our relationship.
Andy has kibosh before.
See where this road is going.
He will kibosh again.
So we're done. Off. Yeah.
Good luck to you.
I'll be fine.
Good luck to your network.
Thank you.
I could not find your acid reflux pills, so I got you Tums and echinacea, found a ginseng.
Oh, what's the matter? You sick?
I have a stiff neck. I have aches.
I should volunteer all that.
I'm not well.
Any tall grass recently?
Oh, in the Hamptons over the weekend. That's yes, with my kid. Why?
No reason.
No reason.
I love this here. This is so good.
Yeah.
Now Larry's going to have two competing dream sequences.
It's like Jerry trying to decide between The Voice and staying together with his girlfriend in season 9.
I'm going to do what you do.
Okay. Hey, everybody. Let's get back to work.
Yep. All right.
Pick it up from Kramer's entrance.
Yep. Yep. Larry, I want you back. Let's go home and make love.
That's version 1. We're headed into a funeral home. Lean over the coffin. Oh, and Todd Stashwick is in the coffin.
Yeah.
Small funeral for a major.
A Barry Sonnenfeld shot.
Yeah. He's weighing his options, flips a coin.
Oh, God.
I love this cut here to the car.
Hello?
Hey! So guess what?
What?
Show's back on!
Get out of here!
Yeah!
Unbelievable!
I know!
What did you do?
I talked to Goodman and, you know, I straightened it out.
You apologized.
No.
I love the you apologize, right? No. Like, he didn't even have it. He got it. He still got his thing.
Yeah. So let me ask you, I mean, so much to talk about that scene. The kibosh drop there, is that like a nod to Crazy Joe DiVola? Or is that just coincidence?
That was handed to me. I don't think I was. I don't think that was the line that I improvised. Oh. I think they gave me that one.
But it was an intentional. Kibosh was an intentional choice there. So that's good.
Yeah. It was written in.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's occasionally, like I said, there's, but you need tops and tails, and they go, okay, as long as you hit this, as long as you hit that, the. So all the stuff in the middle, like, good luck with your network, we'll be fine. Like, all of that stuff, I think that was just us playing, and then him asking about my symptoms. Like, yeah, he's going to ask about your symptoms. Okay, just talk about that. But I think Kibosh was sort of part of the launch into that scene, yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen an apology where the apologizer explains during the apology that it's the maximum amount of sorriness.
This is about as sorry as I can get.
Although, actually, I should say, I was watching Chad last night. It's the show where Nassim Pedrad plays like a 14-year-old Persian boy. Yep. And the character actually does an apology like that, where he actually does the same thing, where he says, you know, this is as sorry as I can get, so you're either going to have to take it or leave it. So maybe they stole that from you guys. As Ob said, I fell off my chair laughing at Larry deciding between the satisfaction of, you know, making the reunion and getting back together with his wife against the enjoyment of seeing a guy who mildly insulted him die.
You know, we talked all episode about how meta this episode is, and the season just increases from there. But having that moment where they play the Curb theme song, which normally signals to you Larry's, you know, loses, and, like, you know, his all his plans kind of wither away, to then, you know, pull back the curtain and say, well, you know, what if, and then have it end on, like, more of an optimistic note, is just, like, such a great pull.
The scene where I'm canceling it, that might have been shot on the same day that we had shot the scene where I'm pitching it to him. I may have had to just rush to the trailer and change shirts and come right back because we were right there. But yeah, it was hysterical.
Yeah. Not quite the perfect happy ending, however, because the end of that call with Jerry is that he's actually bumped into Meg Ryan and she's in for the reunion to play the part of George's ex-wife. So, you know, every step forward, two steps back for this Larry David.
They just basically change feet into next bucket with this show, right?
We need a tease for the next episode. So let's jump right into our ratings for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
this episode is, you know, what I would imagine based on the preseason hype is what we were expecting from episode one of the season. And first we had to get the Blacks out of the way, and then, you know, and then they overstayed. They welcome in Larry's life in season six and leaked into season seven. And now we finally get the reunion we're promised. The episode ends. We're absolutely dying to see what we're going to see next. The Jerry Larry stuff is amazing. The Jerry Jason stuff is amazing. There's so many subtle nods to Seinfeld themes throughout the episode. I absolutely love it. To me, this episode is pretty good. What about you?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Four pretties out of five. Pretty good. It's not the funniest episode, but it's just more just like the amazement of just like seeing this whole group of people together on screen. And, you know, the storyline with Larry and like, you know, the back and forth and the ending and like his interactions with Sandy and, you know, almost throwing the whole thing out the window just because he feels slighted over the seats is good stuff, even though it doesn't necessarily have, you know, the over the top laughter we're necessarily accustomed to from some of the best episodes of Curb. But still, like, you know, the overall episode is like really, really good. So yeah, four pretties out of five. Todd, how about you?
You know, it was the finest episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, there you go. In the history.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Of the show.
All right, so we're gonna pencil you in for the five pretties.
Five pretties for Todd, yeah. All right, so let's move on to our come with guy or gal for this episode. I'm not going to say Sandy. I have another award for Sandy coming up. But for me, the come with gal has to be Cheryl. She's acting. She's into Larry again. She looks incredible. You know, a Leon-less episode usually sucks, but like Cheryl reminds us why she was Larry's partner for the first six seasons of the show. I absolutely love it. This is, I think, the fifth time that I've given this award to Cheryl. So, so she's in second place, still short of Jeff's lead in terms of come with gal points. But who's the come with guy or gal for you?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Sandy Goodman here because, you know, as you said, he's really the protagonist. He's the one that sets this whole thing into motion. Without him, there is no Seinfeld reunion. Sure, is Jerry Seinfeld essential to a Seinfeld reunion? Yes.
Yeah, you could argue.
So is Sandy Goodman. He's the one that makes it happen. He hooks up Larry up with Lakers tickets. Are they the best Lakers tickets? No, but there's Lakers tickets nonetheless. So, yeah, I give it to Sandy Goodman, and the Sandy Goodman guy came on the podcast, so he gets to be the come with guy.
Yep.
See, I can't argue with anything you just said.
Yeah.
I'm in full support of that.
Pretty pristine logic. I agree.
I would say probably I think Sandy's the reason people tuned in.
Yeah. I promised I had another award coming for Sandy, and that is the fucking asshole of the week. So, you know, Susie, very ungrateful for Larry saving her life. Not a fan of that. Jason, you know, he's an asshole for trying to make Larry look bad in front of a random waiter. But Sandy Goodman is the head of NBC, and that's the best he could do for Lakers tickets. You, sir, Sandy Goodman, are the fucking asshole of the week.
and then I cancel the reunion briefly. Then
right. Yeah. Right. Like the head of NBC has never told to go fuck himself.
Yeah. That's the level of pettiness I expect from Larry David. And
I feel like if you're the head of like one of these studios, your main job is to just like take it when like asshole celebrities.
No. Sandy bruises like a banana. Yeah. It's just he's soft fruit.
Sandy bruises like a banana. Like that.
who's
your fucking asshole of the week though? Because you can't give it to Sandy because you already gave him.
Yeah, no, I'm giving the fucking asshole of the week to Jason Alexander.
That's fair.
For everything with the tip and like he, as you said, he insults the Seinfeld finale to the writer of the finale's face. You don't do that. Like just like he's bringing you into work with him again. Like don't play up how like everyone was so disappointed by it.
Yeah, listen, when Larry comes on this podcast. And you're raving to his face about the finale of Seinfeld. I'm going to call you out and impeach the witness right on this.
You better pull the tape.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk quickly about the celebrity cameos we get in this episode. Of course, we get all the core four, but we've actually gotten the big three before. This is Jerry's first speaking role on the show. But as you said, we saw him briefly before. So we have Michael Richards, Meg Ryan, David Spade. Was Meg Ryan in 2009 bigger than Ted Danson in 2000? And the reason I'm asking is Todd, we do a thing where when every guest comes on and plays themselves, we say, were they more or less famous than Ted Danson when Ted Danson appears as himself on the show? That's the line.
We've said Ted Danson as like the threshold level of fame for playing
yourself. For the most famous.
For the most famous.
It's hard to beat Danson.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was very, very famous. But Meg Ryan was in a bunch of big movies, like a bunch of big rom-coms.
You don't have to sell me on Meg Ryan.
Yeah, yeah. It's close.
Like I said, I was in my 20s in the 90s, so.
Yeah.
Meg Ryan.
And I think that's why
people that loves Joe versus the Volcano, and you get three times the Ryan in that. But I'm going to say Meg Ryan was more famous than Ted Danson.
Yeah, I think so.
I think by 2021, Ted Danson's pulled ahead a little bit because, you know, he's Meg Ryan's peak, you know, a few years ago, and Ted Danson's still starring.
Well, Meg Ryan, she was considered a film star at the time. And then I think that sadly Hollywood rates you in terms of movie stars and TV stars. They're like two different camps.
Sure,
right.
I think Meg Ryan is primarily considered a movie star.
Yeah.
So that already carries a flex with it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would say David Spade, I would guess below the Ted Danson radar. But Michael Richards probably above, right? Yeah, no, don't, you don't need to. I mean, you have to keep a relationship alive for that Just Shoot Me reunion that's coming up any day.
It's in the can. There's a lot of legalities with, especially with George Segal. It's
intellectual property is really complicated.
It's rough. Who else was on that? Wendy Malick, right?
Yeah, she was in it
on Just Shoot Me.
She was also in Seinfeld, of course.
Seinfeld was one of those shows I never got to guest on. I got to LA, I think, too late.
Oh, well, you know, you made up for it by creating an episode of Seinfeld.
Yeah. So. Todd, thank you so much for joining us for a great episode of Curb and a great performance by you. You know,
I take all the credit.
Yep. It was all you and Seinfeld and the rest of them, you know, a distant second. In this episode, though, it really was. So,
I'm the driving force. And then for the one after these, I just got to be a sort of a fly on the wall. As background wallpaper of NBC execs, but those were pretty special days as an actor. So it was cool. It was all cool. So
we really appreciate you taking the time for us.
I want to thank you first for having me on.
Yeah.
Oh, you're
so
very welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Todd, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, let you guys so much, get Todd. To your mail.
All right.
Have
thanks
a great
a lot.
Day. Take
have
care.
Have a good night, Todd. Thank you
all
so
right,
much.
Buddy.
Have
a night.
All right, so that was Todd Stashwick. And this is the Postman.
Postman, come here. Tell the neighborhood. Right.
Of course, as always, a reminder, you could send these emails to curbpostman@gmail.com. Or if you're in the pretty good WhatsApp chat group, you could just message it to me if you have my name or on Twitter. You know, there's a lot of ways to find me. Asinensky on Twitter. You know, if you're in that group, you have my number. But yeah, let's get to the Postman. So the first email is from Jim Crumley, and he says, not the funniest episode, but a great setup episode, and he gives it 4 pretties. He says, come with guy is Jerry for trusting Larry. He should go with his own gut, but if he did, there would be no reunion. And Fusk, the fucking asshole, has to be Goodman choosing David Spade over Larry. Sheesh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good email.
Something tells me he's not going to be long for the head of the network with decision-making like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just, you know, I believe the expression throwing out the baby with the bathwater comes to mind.
Yes.
I mean, like, you've been after this Seinfeld reunion for what it sounds like a very long time. And you finally get it, and you throw it away because one of the guys was a jerk to you. And it's like, you know about Larry David, right? You know about Larry David. All right. Next up is William Blake, who says, my name is Will, and I was walking in some tall grass recently. Well, that might be Lyme disease. Well, you should get that checked out. I just saved Will's life. I thought this episode was solid, especially when compared to other episodes that set up the season's conflict story. I agree. This, I think, is definitely the best of all of those like setup episodes. We've had like a bunch of those where it's like he finds out about the restaurant, Mel pitches him on the producers, and like there's been a lot of like early, it's usually been in episode 1 of the season. Here it's episode 3, so it's a little different, but yeah, an absolutely great setup episode. He agrees the common guy is Jerry. That's interesting. Neither of us really even mentioned Jerry as an honorable mention, but yeah, he is the ultimate come with guy, just being like, this sounds like a terrible idea, but if Larry seems into it, I guess I'll go along with it if everyone else says so. I guess that's the definition of a come with guy.
And
Will agrees with me, fucking asshole is Jason Alexander. He always has to be a bit smug with Larry. I don't get it. But he gave the episode 4.5 pretties out of 5. Okay. third email is from the one, the only Jared Jerome, who says he's not really in the mood to write this email, but it's become duty, so I'll straddle the line between doing it sincerely and doing it begrudgingly. Look, this is not a great episode. It's mostly set up for the Seinfeld reunion arc with some baseline level Larry shenanigans to fill the cracks. Jason Alexander bashing the George character, been there. Larry fighting with the television executive, done that. But just having the gang back together, again, warms the cockles of my heart. The scene with Kramer in the nudie restaurant is completely insane, makes no sense, but was the funniest scene of the show for me, just because I got to see that dumbfounded K-Man expression. Obviously, I had to figure out which Lakers game they went to, so let's do some forensic analysis. Chester, did you do any of this?
No, we couldn't see anything about it, and I thought Todd might have the answer, but Todd didn't have the answer for us. So let's see if Jared can get the answer for us.
Yeah, Jared did some work here. So he says the episode aired on October 4th, 2009, which means it was most likely filmed during the 2008-2009 season. Yeah. It's hard to see who the Lakers are playing. All we get are shots of Sasha Vucevic, Pau Gasol, and Trevor Ariza with audio of a checking in Lamar Odom. All those players were on the champion 08-09 Lakers, but who are they playing? As the camera is panning up to Larry and Jeff's nosebleed seats, you can see on the marquee scoreboard, whatever that's called, that the LAL and CHA both have 6 timeouts left. So luckily for us, it was the Eastern Conference Charlotte Bobcats who were making their lone visit to Staples for the year. This occurred on January 27th, 2009, with the 18-26 Bobcats holding on to upset the 35-8 Lakers.
Wow.
117-110 in double overtime.
Wow.
Here's the crazy part.
Oh, that's a great game.
Oh, there's a crazy part coming.
Okay, because I was going to say, like,
allegedly,
a Charlotte Lakers game in 2009 is not a good game at first, but you get a double overtime game. But yeah, what does Jared have coming for us?
The last time they showed a Lakers game in season 6, episode 7, the TiVo guy,
yeah,
Larry watched 2 games, and both of those were also overtime games. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not that crazy. I mean, it's unlikely, but like, yeah, it's not that interesting. So if Larry and company are going to film a game, the Lakers make sure to accommodate them with an OT classic. But I mean, in the TiVo guy, they probably didn't film an actual Lakers game. They probably just used somebody's TiVo.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. When they went to an actual game, obviously, in the Shaq up, so that was against the Timberwolves, but the Timberwolves won that game also. So anytime Curb goes to a Lakers game, the Lakers lose.
Yeah. We also should allow for the possibility that the blown shot of the scoreboard could have been like not from the game that they filmed at. Like they could have realized, oh, we didn't pull.
Yeah, we should have asked Todd if he didn't remember offhand, but if we had said, hey, was it a double overtime loss against the Bobcats, he might have remembered that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we should have.
Oh, let's call him back.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's making dinner for his kid, but let's interrupt that. This is more important.
Yeah. We have a very important question about the episode.
Yeah.
Okay. Seinfeld connection. Jared says none. Asshole of the week.
Is Jared joking?
I assume he's joking.
Okay. All right.
I believe he understands the Seinfeld connections.
Okay. No, but there's so many references throughout, and I thought he was going to, give us the laundry list.
Oh, yeah. That would have been nice if he like really cleaned up and picked up all the pieces.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you want to tag that on the end of next week's email, you should feel free to go ahead. Asshole of the week. No one is particularly horrible this week. And yes, Cheryl's in play, only caring about her own career and willing to use her ex, which she threw to the wolves to gain acting gigs. But I don't want to seem biased, so I'll go with NBC executive Goodman for giving the creator of Seinfeld nosebleed seats while he screens his call. Since courtside with David Spade, what was he being rewarded for? Old Just Shoot Me episodes? Then Goodman acts like a baby, first requiring an apology. What grown-up insists on an apology in the non-curb world and then doesn't accept said apology because it's too begrudging? What is this crap? Just take the apology and end it, Timmy.
Get one apology and end it.
All right. For his come with guy, he says, Jeff is always a candidate for come with guy and asshole of the week since he always comes with Larry wherever he wants to go and also always does asshole-y things like being super excited about Larry's plan to do the reunion just to get Cheryl back. Yeah, that's not really good managing by Jeff, I would say.
Well, you got to support your client. You know what's not good managing is not pulling any strings once you're sitting in those seats. I feel like Jeff should, be making phone calls and get moved up. He should call someone at the Lakers. Hey, you got Larry David sitting in the nosebleeds here. Move him down ASAP.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. But so
I mean, I'm actually, I forget who I was talking to once, but I was speaking to somebody once who told me, who was this? I don't remember, but I was talking to somebody who was at a Knicks game. I think it was a Knicks game with somebody of some much, much, much less famous than Larry David, but they had gone to the game without notifying the team. And someone from the team came up to them during the game and said, oh, hey, so-and-so, come with us, and took them down to better seats once they discovered they were there. I'm trying to remember who I heard the story from. So I think, if the Lakers found out that Larry David was sitting in the nosebleeds, they would have quickly moved him up. So, but yeah, it doesn't work for the episode, obviously.
You would think so. Yeah. So he says he's going to give the comic guy, however, to Jerry for being open to the reunion idea, even though he picked up on the snake oil salesman pitch from Larry. He dealt with Larry's crazy shenanigans and mishaps and even got Meg Ryan to play George's wife, putting a wrench in Cheryl's nepotistic path to becoming a star. Yeah, Jerry's a very good choice for come with guy for this episode.
Okay. That's fair.
He's okay. Let's say good.
Yeah.
Before his ranking, he says it's not a special episode, but the nostalgia of the Seinfeld crew, especially Michael Richards making his first appearance on Curb, has me all a Twitter as I ranked it 37th of the 63 episodes so far. And I'll say it was pretty, pretty, pretty good. That's three pretties and two no pretties. A nice solid episode right in the meaty part of the curve, just the way little Stevie Corin likes it, as we set up what hopes to be some great Seinfeld related moments to come. I pretty much agree with his analysis. I guess I'm just like a little bit higher, but yeah, as I said at the time when we were watching it, like that first scene where like he's talking to Cheryl and the camera just like pans out, you see the core four, and you're just like, oh, like it's like it's like an all-time great TV moment for me.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I have it as a top 20 episode right now. I have it number 18.
Yeah. So next email is from Zach Brooks, who says, I don't think I'd ever bring binoculars to a sporting event. And if I happened to, I wouldn't let some stranger put their gross eyes all over them. Seems like the binoculars experience at games is really poor. Yeah,
do you remember that as a kid taking binoculars to games?
I never did it. I'm sure, you know, I've definitely seen people do it. Yeah, I think
it was like a standard thing you did when you went to a baseball game in the early 90s. But yeah, I haven't done it in 20 years.
Yeah, watch the game on TV then.
Yeah, like, but also I've never seen it done at a basketball hockey game, like at an arena. I've only seen it done at stadiums, which is a much bigger.
I've seen, it's definitely much more common in arenas and stadiums, but I've seen it in arenas.
Yeah, so but I think the peak for that was definitely like the late 20th century.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know what. Yeah, when were binoculars invented?
Yeah, well, I think they were invented before the 20th century, but yeah. But correctly, as what Larry points out in this episode, is when you bring binoculars to the game, it's never for checking out what's going on the field. That you can, the field is pretty clear. It's for looking around the stands and trying to find interesting things. And I think if you go, a place to do it would be at a Lakers game, because you know that there's always going to be celebrities sitting on the floor.
Yeah. So binoculars were invented in 1702.
Yeah. So just in time for the early Major League Baseball games. And by the way, I got to think it's actually kind of stressful to be a celebrity sitting at a courtside seat at a Lakers game, because you know, first of all, you might be on screen at any time, but you know that like somebody can be watching. So, you know, you can't pick your nose. You can't, you know, there's a lot of things. You can't scratch your crotch for two and a half hours.
And these days it's like, it's also like every idiot in the stands with a smartphone might
can
just
catch
be like
you anything,
filming
yeah.
you doing anything. And like, before you know it, like all of a sudden, like you're trending on Twitter because of like, you like picked your nose at the Lakers game or something.
I will say I went to a Knicks game once, not courtside, but very, very close to that. And you also, when you sit in those seats, you also have access to like this little club in the back. Uh-huh. And you sort of go to the club during timeouts and certainly during halftime, you know. So I guess if you have to do any nose picking or ball scratching, you just you go back there and get it done and then come back to your seat. So.
Yeah, sure. I mean, sometimes it's involuntary, though.
Yeah, true.
And sometimes you're just scratching the side of your nose.
Mm, yeah, no pick.
Zach says that Jason Alexander is the fucking asshole of the week. You got to share the tip. Good to see everyone back, but not really that funny of an episode. 3 pretties out of 5. Yeah. So everyone agrees. Not such a funny episode, but still a good episode. So, Curb doing something right here. And last up we have Olin Allen, who says it's great to see one of the co-stars of my film of 2020 here. David Spade was outstanding in his understated role in the wrong Missy, that is. I believe the misdirect there was that Todd Stashwick was in The Way Back from last year as well. Not quite so much to do there. Nice getting the gang back together episode, and the Lyme disease through line was fun. No hysterically funny bits, but as a setup episode for the season, it was very solid. He actually just said solid. I added the very just to make it sound better. I don't know why. I don't want to misquote Olin.
Pretty solid.
Three pretties solids. He says Todd Stashwick was great as the smarmy NBC executive, superficially nice, but not a real people person. He gives it 3 pretties out of 5. The come with guy is Larry, who says he saves people from Lyme disease woes and aims to deliver a great opportunity for sex. Yeah. This is I think this is one where you can go to Larry. He is particularly noble and facilitates a Seinfeld reunion.
Yeah.
Fucking asshole of the week. He agrees with me, Jason Alexander, not realizing how wonderful the George character was for him and willing to embarrass Larry by not strategizing their tip. All right. And that is the end of the Postman. We also remind you, as always, to rate and review the podcast. There is a link in the show notes, or you could go to Apple Podcasts on your own. Give us a 5-star rating, write something nice about us. And that way more people will hopefully find the podcast and like it just as much as you do.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next week, we have the hot towel. Larry burns his hand on an airplane towel. He persuades his doctor to give him his home phone number and will accidentally abuse that trust. Larry is peeved when his expensive anniversary present to Ted and Mary is outshone by Jeff and Susie's daughter's gift, which comes from the heart. So we brought all like, you know, the core four from Seinfeld. The next episode, we go back to sort of like the core characters from Curb, really.
Yeah, the season kind of like starts and stops in the Seinfeld reunion. So basically, the next two episodes are not really going to involve Seinfeld. Episodes 4, the hot towel, and episode 5, Diddy's handicap. Then in season 7, episode 6, we go back to the Seinfeld storyline with the bear midriff, take another break for episode 7, the black swan. And then the last three episodes, Officer Krupke, the table read, and Seinfeld are all very heavy Seinfeld episodes. So yeah, it's basically half and half. We have 5 episodes of the season are Seinfeld plot, 5 episodes of the season are non-Seinfeld plot. And I actually, special treat, I took the time since our last episode, and I realized that we had been logging your rating for every episode, we had been logging my rating for every episode, but we had not been logging the audience rating. And the audience is a very important part of the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I went back and found every email that anyone sends me with a rating for every episode of the season of the series so far. And we've put them all together. And we have a new fancy spreadsheet that I made. I did some Chester work for Chester was away last week. So I took over while he was traveling to do some Chester work. And so what basically the way it's going to work is for every episode, we have my score, we have Alex's score. We're going to have an audience score, which is going to be the average of everyone who submits an episode, whether you're Olin Allen, who has submitted for every episode, or Michael J. Clark, who has only submitted once. And we always welcome new listeners to submit feedback and or ratings, and we will average them all together. If we have a guest, the guest becomes a four-way partner with me, Alex, and the audience. They get their own score for appearing on the podcast. Sometimes guests don't rate, sometimes they do. If they do, we average it in. So this week's episode gets actually a clean 4.00. I see you just restarted. You don't need to do that because I put in, you see, overall rank too, so we know right away.
You did that already. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this episode, as we said, got a 4 from me, a 3.5 from Alex, a 5 from the guest, a 3.5 from the audience, which averages out to a 4.00, which makes it the 13th ranked episode so far out of 64 episodes.
Yeah. Did Jared give 0.2 stars to the bat mitzvah?
He did. He did. Yeah. And you could rate anywhere between 0 and 5. You could, you know, we usually use full or half, but you know, 0.2 is acceptable.
Sure, but no going above 5 or below 0.
So. Oh yes. No, those are acceptable. There are rules. We live in a society.
Yes.
Yeah, and the best episode so far, which probably comes as no surprise, is Crazy Eyes Killer, which has a 4.81 overall grade. So yeah, that's something to keep our eyes on. That's the mark to beat for future episodes of Curb. So
yeah, fortunately Jared did not review that one, because I think Jared doesn't even like that one that much, he said.
Yeah, he's not a huge fan of that one. Jared said he may send me in backdated ratings. For the episode. So we'll see. Yeah, there might be something buggy in this spreadsheet, because when you resorted just that, then it the number changed, so I might have screwed something up.
Oh, okay. Well, we can fix that on the back end.
Yeah. So, I guess maybe for this week, we'll just share the show notes. We'll share like a link to something that shows the full rating so far, and then going forward, we'll just update on, you know, the episode of the week.
And Nelson from Denver, and Ashley, and Bob Savage. I'm looking at a lot of people who have come and gone with the ranking. So let's get some more consistent ranking going on, guys.
Yeah, MJC is interesting, who didn't rate for 7 seasons, came in, rated once, hasn't been heard from since, but you know, that's fine. Write in what you want, don't write in when you don't want to. This is just it's a podcast for an episode that for a season that was on 10 years ago. So it's fine if you don't send it in.
What happened to our friend Bob? Bob was very consistent early.
Bob was very consistent early. Yeah. He had, the first 17 episodes we got a rating and then no more Bob.
And I see Olin missed that Porno Gill is the only episode he neglected to rank.
Oh yeah. I meant to ask him if he has that. Yeah. Or it's possible that I lost the email. So maybe he has it. I was missing a bunch from Zach Brooks. I just texted him hey, do we have your rating for season one, episode three? He's like, yes. I'm like, how about season one, episode six and nine and 2.5? I was missing a bunch of his. I don't know. Maybe he didn't always send an email or he lost them, but yeah, he had them all. He had been tracking them independently. So, everyone should really be tracking their own work. Because if one day someone's like, hey, for the spreadsheet I compiled, I lost your info. Do you still have it? You'll be able to help them out. So yeah, I think that is everything new. Anything you want to share? Anything you want to add?
No, I'm excited. We have a lot of exciting things coming up in season 7. We're getting more of the core four, and I think it's going to be
pretty good.